rulings on future SOPs that we put forward or may have already put forward, you give consideration to the fact that the bill already contains matters very, very similar.
Yes, it's all kind of a game, but it's also a chance for the opposition to make points, to seek publicity for those points, and despite all of that, for all of the MPs to actually achieve the stated purpose of this stage and improve the bill.
That was Phil Smith. You've been listening to The House. I te whakarongo koe ki te whare. I hōtaka e puaki nā tētahi pūtia āwhina nō mai I te pāremata. This program is produced with funding from Parliament. Mā te wā.
And The House will be back with more from Parliament on Tuesday. Sunday morning, 7:45, well, the Child Poverty Reduction Bill had its first reading in February and is due back to report back in August. Janessa Jerram is a policy analyst for think tank The New Zealand Initiative and is raising concerns over how ideas in the bill will actually reduce child poverty and how that poverty itself is measured. She's taking part in the Improving Child Wellbeing Speaker Series run by the Presbyterian Support Northern and will speak at it on the 28th of June in Auckland and the following day in Wellington. Janessa, welcome to Sunday Morning.
Thanks for having me, Wallace.
So let's start with how child poverty is actually defined. What is widely accepted as child poverty?
Well, I think, Wallace, you're asking two questions here. First, how it's actually defined for government purposes, and then what's widely accepted. So for government purposes, child poverty can be measured either using an income measure or a material hardship measure. Now, as for what is widely accepted by society as child poverty, I think that's a different question. And I don't think there's a lot of research actually delving into what the public imagine to be child poverty.
Wouldn't a good guide be that a household resources are too low to meet basic needs? Not having enough when you benchmark against the minimum that we as a society finds acceptable?
Oh, absolutely. And I think when you're picturing child poverty, many of us would picture the same kinds of images, especially homelessness, children going without shoes. But it's how to actually work that into a measure that the government can use and report on that's really difficult.
Well, for the Child Reduction Bill, they use four primary measures of poverty. One is low income before housing costs, below 50% of median income. Number two, low income after housing costs. Three, material hardship. That's using the EU's standard threshold, which is going without things like healthy food, warm clothes, or delaying going to the doctor. And number four is a persistence measure for low income. So that's what they use. Should they be looking at something else or...?
Yes, so you've listed four different measures there. Actually, the Child Poverty Reduction Bill includes 10 measures, so four primary measures and then six supplementary measures. And they include those income measures and the material hardship measures. I think one of the most confusing parts about the Child Poverty Reduction Bill is that we've got too much going on there. With 10 different measures, all looking at slightly different things, I think it's really easy to be overwhelmed.
So what is the minimum standard then? What should we be looking at, or don't we have the data?
I would say we're not close enough yet to getting that data. So one of the most interesting measures in that bunch looks at not only income poverty, but material deprivation. It looks at the groups that suffer an overlap. So we know that only about 40 to 50% of people who are deemed to be in poverty actually suffer from both income poverty and the material hardship. So we need to know what's happening with this group because it does seem like they're suffering, I guess, the most severe types of poverty, but also understand what's happening with the other groups who are just income poor but not materially deprived or materially deprived groups who aren't actually in income poverty.
So you're saying that some people are listed could be in the net of being in poverty when they really aren't?
Well, depending how you measure it, yes.
Right. You said a couple of years ago, in 2016, that poverty in New Zealand can mean anything the commentator wants it to mean. Quoting, "If poverty were to be defined in global terms, then it is indeed ridiculous to compare the cell phone-toting poor in New Zealand with the malnourished children we see on World Vision ads," unquote. Is that what you still believe?
I believe it triggers a reaction when you say things like that, but I think it is delving into a lot of public perceptions of poverty in New Zealand and why I think it's so important to actually talk about poverty and define poverty in ways that are consistent with the public's understanding of the measure.
This is what Vivian Mayborn, Executive Director of the UN, said, that finding out how many kids really live in poverty has become a ball to be tossed around in an endless debate about child poverty measurement. for years. This has been going on for a long time, about how we define it, and it kind of has stopped us from doing anything about it. What do you think?
I totally agree with that. I think we spend a lot of time getting stuck in the semantics. However, I do think the semantics are important because they do hint at policy solutions. That's when it gets really important. So, I mean, we talk about terminology and there will be people who roll their eyes saying, why don't we just get on with things? But when you're measuring your progress according to a certain definition and measure, it is important to be accurate about what you want to do and whether the policy solutions will help you achieve that.
Well, this is what Children's Commissioner Judge Andrew Bearcroft said on A Nation a couple of weeks back, quoting, I was recently in Māori. I met a mum who lived on the back of her father's section in a portable constructed unit with her two kids, poorly insulated, cold, wet, mould on the inside. The five-year-old going to the doctor each week for a chest issue. She's in tears. The children go to school in wet clothes. She's struggling to move them around in a beaten car. We cannot have that. Is that poverty?
Absolutely. And I think when we're hearing stories like that, and we are confronted by these stories in the media quite often, we do want to do something. And I'm just concerned that the Child Poverty Reduction Bill doesn't actually get us closer to improving these people's lives.
So what do you think about the Child Poverty Reduction Bill?
If I had to give you one word to describe it, I think underwhelming is that word. I don't think it will necessarily do harm, but I don't think it's going to do much to improve people's lives either. I mean, we already collect a range of measures. We already collect a lot of information and data. What the bill does is formalise the government's intentions, but it also opens the door, I guess, to politicising the issue.
The Children's Commissioner, again quoting him, said that this is massive, fantastic news that you have a government who is prioritising child poverty reduction. These are his words, his views, that has a bill before the House to oblige targets and long-term plans to halve poverty in 10 years. You don't agree?
I agree that it is great for any government to prioritise child poverty. I would disagree that it does more so than other governments. I mean, all we really have is a bill with child poverty in its name. We're not getting any closer to actually addressing the issues at hand. And I think the reason why I'm getting sceptical is because the bill is so complicated. We're talking about so many different measures that we're going to spend a lot of time, again, talking about terminology and semantics rather than addressing the real causes of poverty.
Well, he's not the only one, Janessa. It seems like people in the sector are widely supportive. Associate Professor Nikki Turner, Division of General Practice and Primary Healthcare, you know, frontline, University of Auckland, saying, quote, this proposed child poverty reduction bill is a hugely important first step towards progressing child poverty reduction and should not be understated in its significance. So what are they saying that you aren't?
I wish I could tell you, Wallace, because when I read that poverty reduction bill, I'm not getting that same kind of reaction, and I really want to. I think there are problems in New Zealand that should be addressed, and actually I think we're
What's the key thing? What should be addressed?
I would say the key thing at the moment is housing. I mean, the previous government did deny that we had a housing crisis, but being confronted by these media stories every single day, people being confronted by hardship in their own backyards, I think that's more effective in illustrating the problems that we're facing as a society. I mean, yes, reporting on child poverty targets and measures is important, but what's more important is people's lived experiences, and if not their own experiences, then the reports that they then receive of people who are in hardship.
Yeah. I mean, what are we looking at? About 1 in 8 or 12% of New Zealand's children are in poverty. This is a problem that has been festering for 30 years. I'm just quoting economist Susan St. John on The Guardian last month. And Anne Pettifor, very influential British economist who worked with the likes of Maria Mazzucato, Joseph Stiglitz, Thomas Piketty in the Prime Working Group, said to me, Janessa, that she was shocked at the level of New Zealand's child poverty when she heard about it. Are you shocked?
Yes, I am. I'm shocked, but also frustrated and concerned that there's not enough being done to address these real causes and problems. I mean, we talk a lot about how to measure the problem and, I guess, wringing our hands over it. I'm shocked at how slow progress is.
So if we successfully measure the problem of child poverty in New Zealand, what would be the next step that you'd do?
Well, I would probably go a step back and first look at the causes of poverty, or what we think are the causes. What are the risk factors that could lead to poverty? And I know the previous government was looking at that. And it's only then that we can really come to a closer opinion on what poverty actually means.
I'm just looking, I think aren't we beyond that? I mean, we've got to start looking at some practical solutions, some concrete stuff. Now, here's one, for example, that I'll put to you. One thing that, again, the Children's Commissioner said that stood out as being extremely important for him, but actually said it isn't been done, is the indexing of benefits to the median wage, saying that we need to have benefits for children indexed to wages. If you look at the graph, early 80s they're together, and then gradually wages go up and benefits stay pretty flat. Now the gap is massive. We have dropped the ball on policy for children. So what about that idea?
That's one recommendation of how to alleviate income poverty. But when I mentioned before that there is a group of people who are suffering from income poverty and material hardship who appear to be suffering the most severe types of poverty, I'd really want to know whether that particular policy recommendation is improving the lives of these people.
Sounds like a fair enough thing to do, though, isn't it? If you think about it, I mean, incomes for superannuitants rise much faster than for beneficiaries because super here is indexed to average wages, which has risen faster than inflation since the 80s. So if we are talking about meaningful poverty step change, you know, putting more money into the pockets to spend on those kids, this built-in preference to our elders at the expense of our very youngest perhaps should go, and we should index benefits to median wage.
Wallace, I wish that child poverty in New Zealand was that simple, that we could just solve this problem through money. But the reality is that the children who are in poverty and the families who are in poverty often suffer a range of social complexities as well. So there are difficulties in education, there are backgrounds in crime, as well as health problems. I don't think money in and of itself will solve all of these problems.
But it's the most important, isn't it? Back to the very start, as I said, a good guide to child poverty is household resources being too low to meet basic needs and not having enough when you benchmark against the minimum that we as a society finds acceptable. You know, if you don't have enough money in the house, all those other things are going to fall by the wayside.
Oh, I totally agree, and I don't want for a second to imply that money isn't important, but I don't want policy recommendations aimed at just giving cash transfers to neglect the causes of poverty as well, which means improving our education system, improving access to healthcare, improving our crime rates and statistics, and really reducing the rates of domestic violence. There are so many social problems and issues in New Zealand that all seem to be interrelated somehow that I think money is part of the solution, but it's definitely not the entire answer.
All right, then. Here's someone who, like you, doesn't say that the child reduction bill has gone anywhere near enough. And I'll quote her. This is, again, economist Susan St. John, saying that research by advocacy group the Child Action Poverty Group shows, back to money, that in Auckland, a sole parent with one child would need an extra $185 a week on top of current welfare benefits to get over the after housing costs poverty line. A couple with two children would need an extra $334, but the family's package will deliver a maximum of only $47 a week extra for the two-child family. So she's asking, who's going to pick up the $287 shortfall? Again, money in housing. Not enough money coming in.
Yes, and it reflects the fact that different households have different cost pressures as well. I mean, the cost pressures for a household in Auckland will be different from someone in the rural areas. And it's the difficulty of having an income measure in the first place and income solutions. We don't actually know what kind of cost pressures and budget pressures that individual households face. And that is something that at least the material hardship measure tries to kind of illustrate. So it shows how many households are going without going to the doctor when they need to, or going without heating during winter. So I do think it's important that households have the income they need, but we need to acknowledge that there's no set amount. It will be different for different families.